AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
The House Ag Committee is meeting right now, and one of the items on the agenda is a bill that would take a step towards bringing more transparency to the cattle markets. We'll get those details, and the supply chain remains clogged, but we are any progress.
Live from the very edge of Soymageddon via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Tanner Bamer from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Then it's Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Coalition. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Laurie.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. But I got to ask, did I miss something? I mean, are we really that close to the edge of Soymageddon?
We may be right on the edge. I got a text from Bubba. You know, he and I had a great conversation yesterday afternoon.
Yes.
It read simply, this today, 9:19 Central, 12:40 could not hold. Dun, dun, dun. Right now trading 12 cents lower in the November contract, 12:33 and a half.
Right. Right.
Maybe McGeddon is too much.
Yeah, it's looking a little sketchy in there. There's no question about it. And the thing is, we had an export sales report out this morning, and the bean sales were outstanding,
yes.
Man.
Yes. Very solid.
Just blew through the top end of trade expectations. But that November contract, it rolled right up to 12 and a half again. Well, 12:49 and a half was the high, and could not work up the momentum to get up through that resistance level. So Here we go, testing support one more time.
Yes.
So the House Ag Committee, as I mentioned in the open, the House Ag Committee is meeting today. And one of the things that they're going to be talking about is a marketing library, the contract library for the cattle market. There's one for hogs, but there is not one for cattle. And this is one of the things that we have heard mentioned, Davis, countless times.
Yes. And recently
as one way to bring some transparency. The problem is that it's always been grouped in with other issues, other items. They've broken it out and said, listen, this is something that everybody agrees on. Let's just do this individually right now and see what kind of progress we can make. So we're going to talk about that in the next segment. Looking forward to getting the details of that. Okay, let's get to it. What you got in the news, man?
Well, Jeff, Fed Governor Randall Quarles warned that extended high inflation through next spring could force the central bank to consider raising interest rates sooner than anticipated. He still expects higher prices to ease next year as bottlenecks and supply chain disruptions fade. If the Fed raised rates in response to recent price surges driven by the economic reopening, the central bank could constrict demand at the same moment that supply bottlenecks abate, Quarles said during a moderated discussion at a conference in Los Angeles. Walking a very, very fine line here, Chip.
Oh, yeah. And getting this right when they decide that it's time to start raising interest rates and pulling back on the reins on the money supply, getting it right is going to be exceptionally difficult. There's no question about it.
Well, according to the Federal Reserve's Beige Book, during the third quarter, economic activity grew at a modest to moderate rate, according to most Federal Reserve districts. Several districts noted, however, that the pace of growth slowed during the period. On the banking side, Chip, demand for livestock loans grew in the third quarter, boosting ag lending activity at commercial banks. The average size of loans for some livestock categories reached an all-time high. Demand for operating loans was more subdued, however, and total non-real estate lending remained near its average of the past decade. Wow. California Governor Newsom... go on.
Well, I was just going to say the livestock loans, that's interesting. It's got to have something to do with the cost of feed.
Well, California Governor Newsom has issued an executive order to address the shortage of truck drivers and container storage to try to move critical cargo out of the state's ports and alleviate congestion. The order directs agencies to find state, federal, and private land for short-term container storage while identifying freight routes for trucks so officials can temporarily exempt weight limits on the road. Somebody's trying to do something here anyway, buddy.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but this feels like, you know, like in Raiders of the Lost Ark when they put the Ark into that warehouse, that massive warehouse. Yes. It just kind of feels like that's what they'd be creating. Who knows when that last container, who knows when the first container into one of these temporary storage units would find its way out.
Well, Senate Democrats are considering abandoning some central tax elements of their human infrastructure package as Senator Kyrsten Sinema continues to oppose any increase in marginal rates for businesses, high-income individuals, or capital gains, according to sources cited by the Wall Street Journal. Losing the rate increases would punch a significant hole in the Democrats' plan for funding the package, now expected to cost around $2 trillion over a decade. Chip, it feels like this is kind of falling apart on them a little bit, this human infrastructure bill.
Well, you know, it's like we talked about with Representative Graves earlier this week. There is a real risk that not only the reconciliation bill is going to fall apart, but that would probably pull the infrastructure bill down with it, too.
And quickly here, Afghanistan's new Taliban rulers want to convene a United Nations donor conference to help the country stave off economic collapse and a humanitarian catastrophe. And finally, China is reversing course on earlier ambitions to curb coal use and setting new policies to revive production and imports of the electricity-generating fuel. Chip.
Well, yeah, you can only be scared of making the energy and making enough electricity for so long. So, yeah, they've got to do something about it. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Chip.
Okay, so we've been watching a fairly consistent cow slaughter pace this year. What's it going to mean for the beef cow inventory at the end of the year?
Well, absolutely. To date, we're still seeing 10% higher cow slaughter and 5% higher heifer slaughter. And that's the number that livestock analysts use to basically build estimates into their January 1 inventory report. So the 2021 percentage of cow and heifer slaughter is on track to reach 43.5% of the number of cows we had on January 1. And that's the upper end of the range that they look at. And it suggests a beef cow herd reduction somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.5 to 2.5%, probably close to that 2% range if we maintain cow slaughter as it is. Now, the last related low point, Chip, in beef cow herd was recorded in January 2014. And that was the lowest number since 1951 at 29 million cattle. Or 29 million beef cows, I'm sorry. But we're going to be right around 31.2 for this year, probably going to be down about 2%. Question is, what's that going to do to prices? Because we're going to have a lower supply. I looked at Analytica's numbers and its projections. He's suggesting, you know, fed cattle prices next March, next April, and that 133 to 134 range would be, you know, at least $10 higher than it was this year. So supplies declining. We've been saying this for, what, 3 or 4 months now? A smaller supply is going to lead to better prices. We'll see if it comes through.
Right. Yeah. And I'd normally say that means higher beef prices too, but I don't know if that relationship holds true anymore or not, buddy.
Well, we're seeing evidence that it doesn't hold true. Absolutely.
Exactly. Thank you, Greg.
We've talked about resistance already. Thanks, Chip.
Pulling acres ahead of the competition is simple. Senex Maxtron synthetic diesel engine oils give you the smartest oil for the toughest conditions. These premium oils are formulated with EnduroVis technology and a balanced additive package to control deposits for a cleaner, more efficient engine that gives you proven durability. Enjoy watching the others follow in your tire tracks. Senex Maxtron diesel engine oils. Oil that runs smart.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Man, Davis, the next two segments here, we're getting into some of the issues that I think are top of the mind to producers all over the country, talking about what's going on with the cattle market and the transparency issue. And then in the next segment, we'll be talking about the supply chain chaos that continues with Mike Steenhoek. So,
great.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Let's get to what is happening right now. As a matter of fact, let me take a look over there at the business meeting. Yeah, the business meeting continues. Mr. Costa is speaking right now, and they are talking about it as we speak. And as we bring in Tanner Bamer, who is the Director of Government Affairs and Market Regulatory Policy at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Tanner, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you today?
Doing real fine. As we speak, the House Ag Committee is talking about the Cattle Contract Library Act of 2021. So our timing couldn't be better. What's in this this proposal?
Well, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, I had my line on mute and the business meeting up and playing in the background up until about 10 seconds ago. So, yeah, you're right. The timing couldn't be better. So this piece of legislation would accomplish a longstanding priority, not just for NCBA, but for the vast majority of our state affiliate organizations and multiple other industry groups. It would authorize the creation and maintenance of a cattle contract library. And what that would do is it would maintain a searchable database through USDA that would allow cattle producers to go and look at all of the contract arrangements and the details of contracts that are offered by packers to producers for the purchase of fed cattle. And this is a really important market transparency tool for producers because information is power, and allowing them to compare their marketing agreement to those of other cattle producers who may be raising similar types of animals allows them the opportunity to potentially go into some of these negotiations with packers and negotiate more favorable terms or terms that are more in line with the overall marketplace. So this is a tremendous step in the right direction on market transparency and something that we've been supportive of for a very long time. Have to give a huge shout out not only to Congressman Dusty Johnson and Henry Cuellar for introducing the bill, but also to Chairman Scott and Ranking Member Thompson for all of their leadership on this bill and all of the hearings that have led up to introduction for this legislation.
Okay, cool. So if we go all the way back to, I think it was May, Tanner, when NCBA got together with all the major players, when you come right down to it, I think Farm Bureau was there, LMA was there, Farmers Union was there, RCAF, U.S. Cattlemen's Association, they were all there. And this is the one item that I felt like there was the highest level of agreement that this is something that we should pursue and go forward with. Do I have the right read on that?
Absolutely. And I think that's one thing that makes this bill so much different than the others, right? There are widespread opinions throughout different geographical regions of the country, through different segments of the cattle supply chain, on how best to address some of these really serious market issues that we're facing right now. But the Cattle Contract Library is one of those things that has across the board support from all sectors of the industry. And I think that speaks to the need to pay extra close attention to this, right? The fact that we all can agree on this issue is substantial in and of itself. And I think that members of Congress have recognized that, and they're really excited to finally have something that there's consensus on that they can move forward with and hopefully start to move the needle towards bringing relief to cattle producers who've had a very difficult few years, as we all know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The geography of the issue, as you said, is something that is important. And it's not lost on me that the northern market is represented by Congressman Johnson and the southern market is represented by Congressman Cuellar in this whole proposal. I don't think that is something that we should overlook. We've got the north and the south represented in this.
Absolutely. I mean, look, if you look at the types of cattle feeding operations that are present in states like South Dakota and states like Texas, they're very different. And the packers that are buying those types of cattle are looking for different things. In the north, they tend to incentivize quality grades. And in the south, it's more so dressing percentage. So they're very similar, but in a way, they're very different business models. And so I would agree with you wholeheartedly that the geographic diversity of those that have introduced the bill, co-sponsored bill, and are now supporting it on the floor, that bodes well for, you know, just how much support this concept has throughout the industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Now, one of the goals, and it's mentioned throughout some of the analysis that I've seen that Greg Henderson did on it in particular, but the Cattle Contract Library Act of 2021 is expected to give feeders and feed yards, small producers, greater leverage with meat packers. Explain to me exactly how that's going to work.
Well, right. I mean, first and foremost, I think it's important to point out that NCBA and even Congressman Johnson himself said this moments ago, this legislation is not a silver bullet solution. It will not improve the current marketing environment overnight, but it is a significant step in the right direction. You know, market transparency is one of what four major issues that I observe the industry keeping coming back to. Improving processing capacity is among that, market oversight with these Justice Department investigations, and then also increasing price discovery, which has been a very hot topic within the industry for the past several years. But specifically, this legislation from a market transparency perspective, again, information is power. The more information that you have going into a negotiation, the better your leverage position is going to be when you're having those negotiations, trying to get a pricing mechanism negotiated between you and a packer, who in this case would be the buyer of your cattle. And so that's what this library is intended to do. It's designed to give you more information to see where the market is at, what types of traits are being incentivized, and at what level those are being incentivized, so that you can go in and have that conversation with a packer and maybe say, hey, look, I noticed that, you know, you're incentivizing these characteristics in cattle over here. Well, I also have that quality exhibited in my cattle. Maybe this is something that we can negotiate a different pricing structure that's more favorable.
Okay. Very cool. Information like this is best if it is up to date. I assume that this would be a living, breathing document that every time there is something new added to the AMAs, that it would be uploaded and included in the library.
That's right. Yep. The way that the bill is currently structured, it would need to be regularly maintained with some monthly reports to account for additions. It's also important to note that if there is a contract that is no longer being offered for whatever reason, you know, as we get several years down the road and the conditions in the marketplace change, those contracts that are no longer being offered will also still be in the library. They'll just be marked as inactive. And so that's why it's imperative. It's also important to note that the way they're going about authorizing this library, they're doing it via livestock mandatory reporting. And so every 5 years or so, this program would come back up for consideration before Congress. If there need to be some tweaks made to make it even more of an effective tool, that opportunity is available to members of Congress every 5 years with LMR.
Okay, very cool. Now, one of the notes that I saw in here is that it's going to require publishing of the total number of cattle solely committed to the packer each week within the 6 month and 12 month period following the date of the contract by reporting region. What exactly does that mean? Is that backward looking reporting or is it forward looking disclosure?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's helpful to know that, you know, first of all, the contract library really goes a long way to shedding more light into the formula transaction bucket. Formula transactions are one of four categories that USDA reports under livestock mandatory reporting. But unlike the other three, it's more so defined by what it isn't than by what it is. The formula is the catch-all bucket for any transaction that doesn't meet the definition of the other three. So no formula is the same. I think the one that the model that producers are most familiar with is some sort of a base price that's established and then a schedule of premiums and discounts added and subtracted from that base price. But top of market transactions, or let's say the previous week's weighted average cash price plus a couple dollars, that also is a formula transaction. So along with that, cattle commitments are useful information for producers. It helps them understand what the packers' inventory needs are from week to week. And that helps producers, whether they're selling on a formula basis or even in the cash market, because it helps them better anticipate those packer inventory needs on a week-to-week basis.
Right, right. Okay. I only got about 30 seconds left for this one, but how would the information be available? You mentioned earlier through USDA, right?
Yes, and unlike other efforts to tee up a cattle contract library, this one does it via the Agricultural Marketing Act. And that's substantial because other efforts use the Packers and Stockyards Act, and Packers and Stockyards Division is where the swine contract library that currently exists is warehoused.
Okay.
This way, you send it to the Market News Division. They already have the experience with LMR, and they are well-versed in maintaining market information like this.
Okay. All right. Hey, that was a fun conversation. Thank you, Tanner. I appreciate it, man.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
All right. That's Tanner Bamer. He is the Director of Government Affairs and Market Regulatory Policy at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Cool stuff. We got Mike Steenhook up next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, I don't know if the bean market can handle any more good news like we got from that export sales report this morning.
Yeah, the weekly sales were really big, Chip. But, you know, we knew a good portion of that because of the daily sales announced unknown destinations in China over the reporting period. But still, they came in stronger than anticipated. But I think we have to look broader than that. You know, when we look at the commodity complex as a whole, under heavy pressure today. And so we got a lot of risk off trade going on right now at the moment. And definitely soy oil's caught up in it. Soybeans are caught up in it. And the meal market's pulling back as well. And that's spilling over into the wheat market and the corn. And so grain and soy complex futures are definitely feeling the pressure from those outside markets this morning.
Yeah, no question about that. And you look over at the energy contracts, you got crude oil off more than $2 a barrel right now. And the whole energy complex is under pressure. Take us into the livestock trade. I guess no surprise, we've got some pressure on lean hogs.
Yeah, not a surprise there, given the stuff that we talked about in those outside markets and the poor finish yesterday. So we filled that September 27th gap that we've been talking about, closed low range, and active follow-through selling this morning and extending losses here mid-morning. So it's kind of building on itself at the moment. And futures are extending their discount to the cash index. The cash is falling, but the futures are falling at a faster clip at the moment. So a very pessimistic attitude there. Cattle market also is caught up in the sell-off, and weekly export sales for both beef and pork were poor.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Davis with me.
Hello.
And I believe the motion to advance the library, the cattle market library, just passed.
Oh, great.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's making it. It looks like it's going to make some fairly quick progress here. I hope I'm not misreading what I am seeing when I say that, but hopefully it is making some quick progress. One place that I know we're not making quick progress is resolving the supply chain issues that we've got out there. Let's get a status update from Mike Steenhoek. Mike is the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. Mike, welcome back. How are you, man?
I am doing fine, Chip. It's always good to be with you.
It's always good to be with you. I was fascinated and intrigued by the last, kind of white paper that you sent out to us. And I think it is important to understand the origins of the supply chain crisis that we are dealing with right now. And I go through your explanation and your thoughts of how this whole thing started.
Well, of course, when the pandemic hit in spring of 2020, the initial knee-jerk reaction to that was a significant curtailment of manufacturing. And then when the global economy started to rebound, what happened was there was a significant amount of stimulus spending, particularly here in the United States, which made consumers flush with money to spend on something. And what we all did is we shifted that spending disproportionately away from services and into goods. So people weren't going on vacations and movies and going out to eat dining, and it went into goods. And so all of a sudden that put a dramatic increase of demand on manufacturing and therefore the supply chain that accommodates it. And we've really been catching up ever since. There's been obviously a lot of attention on it right now, and because the problem is quite acute and we're in Christmas season, so people are thinking about making sure that they're able to buy the things that they want to buy. But this is something that really has been manifest, easily starting late spring, summer of 2020. So this is something that's been with us for the considerable period of time. And it's something that there is not a real easy magic wand to this. It's not like if you're right. A cupcake shop owner and all of a sudden you need to double your production of chocolate cupcakes. Well, that you can do that in a day. This is something quite different. So it's going to take a longer time to finally emerge from this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right there. And it has been around for a while. It's been building to where we're at right now. And the White House says that it's had a supply chain task force in place for months. If that is true, and as I've said, I've got no reason to believe that it's not true, they had to have seen this coming and couldn't do anything about it. Is that your take on it?
Well, there's clearly been storm clouds on the horizon, and one of them was, we saw, with the traditional back to school, there's a couple big waves of shipping that happened during the course of the year. There's early in the year, and then there's kind of a hiatus, and then you've got the back to school season, and then the big tsunami is the holiday season, and we knew that was going to be on the horizon, and so that's obviously the real concern. But I would say, here in the United States, one can argue our biggest dilemma is shortage of labor when it comes to our supply chain. You've got these truck driver shortages. That's something that's been around for many, many years, way preceding the pandemic. But then when you look at these modes of transportation and securing workers, for some people, it's a very attractive lifestyle, being a truck driver or working on a barge or working for a railroad. But for a lot of people, they frankly want to be home at night and to be with their families, and they don't want to have elongated times away from home. So now these modes of transportation, they're competing more and more with construction, they're competing more with distribution, with retail, all of these other sectors that are desperately in need of workers as well. So it's really making it more and more of a challenge. So one could argue our supply chain challenge, it's attributed to a lot of things, but labor is a real big thing. So, if I had the ear of the president and any influential person in this country, I think it's important to ask what's causing this labor shortage and what are the things that we can actually do to help ameliorate that and address it. That would certainly, and if we do that, we'll certainly make some headway on this.
Yeah, excellent. And by bringing truck drivers into the conversation here, it gets us to another point that you stressed in your notes, and that is that it's easy to look at all the boats, all the ships that are anchored off coast and think that this is a port issue only, and it's not. It's it's a problem up and down the supply chain, correct?
It is, you know, so, you know, we certainly, I mean, that's a real powerful visual, these huge ships that are all in queue waiting to have a berth. And so, and it really does a good job of succinctly capturing the dilemma. But, you know, when you look at our supply chain, each link is overly subscribed right now. So if you say, if you help address and provide some relief at the port link, all that's happening is that stress is getting passed on to another link that's under stress. And so you really need to look at it more holistically. I mean, we certainly applaud any effort by our national leaders to try to address these issues. We're hopeful that it will provide some degree of relief, but I do think it's important to ground ourselves in the fact that there's something quite significant that's causing all of this, and it's going to take a while for it to unravel.
Okay. What's your evaluation of what California Governor Newsom is looking at doing, which is he's directing the agencies to find state, federal, private land for short-term container storage while identifying the freight routes for trucks? It sounds like let's get the stuff off the boats and on the ground so that we can get it on a truck when we can get it on a truck. Does that make sense to you?
I mean, I think that's some creative thinking that that has worked in certain other areas of around the world, and I think that could provide some degree of relief for this situation. One of the big challenges that's confronting the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach is you've got this massive port complex, largest in the United States, but then over years it's been surrounded by population. So you don't have this spare land, these big parking spots that you would like to utilize. So I think it could be helpful to do some of these kind of initiatives like that that could provide some degree of relief. I don't think anyone's describing it as the panacea, but we need to be open to all of those types of initiatives.
Absolutely. Okay. It's not just the U.S. either, is it, Mike? It's happening all over the world.
No, and you see sometimes some of the most greatest degree of congestion is at some of the ports in China. And what's contributed to that is you'll have a COVID outbreak at a number of workers at one of those ports. And then the Chinese government just shuts it down entirely. And then all of a sudden that creates log jams at that particular port. Or you can have a weather-induced event like a hurricane. We saw that here in the United States. So when you've got an overall stressed supply chain and then you insert, say, a pandemic outbreak or a weather event, it really starts adding insult to injury and really compounds the problem.
Okay. What is the status down at the Gulf? How much have we got back up and operating?
We're really pleased that we're seeing that, you know, a lot of recovery, that Bayer fertilizer plant that's back online, which that's certainly good news, and seeing those other facilities being able to export, particularly as we have harvest season. That Cargill facility is still a concern that had some damage to it, and that's going to take some time for that to get repaired. But you know, getting power restored at the end of September was a real big win, and that really helped, you know, move things forward.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the situation on the river, Mike, on the Mississippi River? Because I know the water level is very low. It's got to be slowing down some of the efforts, too.
Yeah, there have been some barges that have been light loaded, which that decreases our efficiency. I think the Corps of Engineers has done a pretty commendable job throughout the course of this summer to do dredging on the inland waterway system upriver that's really helped allow navigation and commercial navigation to proceed. And so that's been really helpful. And it just really underscores the importance of these kind of investments on dredging and those kind of things.
Okay, very good. Got about a minute left here, Micah, but I got to ask you, the supply chain issues that we're dealing with, will we be dealing with them this time next year?
I think there's a really good chance for that because people are not only wanting to get the freight that they need for today, but they're wanting to make sure they get it for their anticipated demand. So that's pulling even more demand for manufacturing and for the transportation that services it. So again, I wish it was something that could go away tomorrow, but it's definitely going to be with us throughout 2021 and I think well into 2022.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. If you go to the store and you want to buy something and it's not there, you're disappointed. But the next time that you show up and it is there, you don't just buy one, you buy two, don't you?
Yeah, and that phenomenon that happens with us personally, that's happening with manufacturers and retailers, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. And that cupcake shop is buying more of their cupcake papers and everything than what they normally would. Great conversation, Mike. Thank you so much. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, Chip. Have a good one.
You bet. That is Mike Steenhook. He is the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. Davis and I will be back to wrap up this morning's AgriTalk in just a moment.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Your pal Davis Michelson here with Chip Flory, of course.
Yes.
A couple of good, very pertinent, cutting-edge conversations. Tanner Bamer from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Mike Steenhook, and just an update on Soymageddon. Bleeding continues down 17.5 in the November contract to 12.28. Now, if I'm looking at this right, looks like we got to close above 11.96. Okay, little ways to go, little ways to go yet before we're in full panic mode. But then below that, we step down. Where do we step down to? 11.60, and then all the way down to 11.10, clear back from January of this year.
Yeah, and looking at that November contract, I mean, the low that we posted back on, what was it, October 13th?
Mm-hmm.
Not that long ago.
Yeah.
But the low that we posted there was 11.84.5. So it'd be nice to hold above that low that we posted the middle of the month. So,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, it would be. It would be.
Go on.
No, you go.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, how cool was it that the committee was meeting just as we were talking about that whole thing with Tanner Bamer from NCBA, and then we actually come out with a result. Is that right?
Well, I'm looking to confirm that, but yes, I believe that they did, that they advanced it.
I think so too.
If that's the case, I mean, that's it happened really quick, and it's like Tanner was talking about. There are so many issues in this cattle market right now. And yes, people are looking for a silver bullet. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but there is no silver bullet when we're talking about an issue with the complexity that we are talking about with the cattle market. But there are steps that can be taken that will have meaningful results as we move forward, and putting the details of these of the formula based or the contracts that are being written between some of the feed yards and the packers, putting the details of those contracts out there for everybody to see. There's one thing that I didn't hear Tanner say that it feels to me like that this is what it's doing. It's leveling the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You don't know what's available to you unless you know what's available to you.
Right.
And that's what this does. And I'm sure that cattlemen have looked at the hog marketing library and tried to take some of those concepts and bring them over to the cattle side, use that in conversation and negotiations with cattle buyers. But there's nothing better than being able to pull out a contract that was done between a feed yard and a packer and saying, listen, I can do this, only I can do this better.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get something going on this route.
And so, that's that That's that transparency that we've been talking about. I don't even know how. I mean, how long have we been on the air? How long has the show been? I think that's how long we've been saying we need more transparency in the cattle market.
Right, right, right. Now the thing is, if we take one of those contracts out of the library, and someone that usually negotiates the sale of their cattle, okay, and gets a bid lately, gets a bid when they can get a bid. I understand that some guys aren't even getting a bid right now. But if they take one of these contracts and the packer says, okay, you know what? Let's do your next pen. Let's do your next pen on that contract. And the feeder discovers, you know what? I really like that. Did we just remove a negotiated sale and a negotiated transaction from the equation going forward?
Oh, good question. That's one of them them unintended consequences, perhaps, that you always hear so much about.
Yep, the center square. That's the center square of this conversation's bingo card, the unintended consequences.
Well, and that's, you know, more philosophically, isn't that the whole thing with unintended consequences, is they can't be anticipated? You can work as hard as you want to try and anticipate them, but then they wouldn't be unintended consequences. They would be anticipated consequences.
That's right. That's right. The problem with it is that there are normally people out there that will identify a potential consequence, but sometimes their reason isn't heard. Okay. Then later it just gets labeled an unintended consequence. Well, okay, yeah, it was unintended, but it was not unforeseen. So that's part of the issue. That's part of the issue with a lot of the ideas that get floated around changes and legislation for the cattle industry, is there are really smart people involved in, from every angle of this thing, that can say, okay, yeah, I see how that would work, but, and the yeah buts are all over the place on this cattle issue, Davis, all over the place. And they're good points. That's the thing. They are good, meaningful, thought out counters and concerns to some of the proposals that are out there. It's just that in the case of this library, I think everybody is in agreement that if a deal is getting done one way, everybody should know about it.
Well, and I'm surprised that there isn't one already. How can there not be a library of this stuff already?
You know? it took a meeting of the, it took a meeting that nobody thought could happen.
Right.
Back in
right.
May.
Yep. I remember that. You know, everybody was so excited and giddy.
With all the players getting together, it took that kind of a meeting to get this to happen. And that was in May. Here we are 5 months later. Yep. And we've got, in the big picture, I guess 5 months later is moving pretty quick.
It really is when it comes to this issue. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no
need a little more kumbaya in the cattle industry.
Yes, and I just got confirmation from that I was looking for that. Yes, it did pass by voice vote, and it is moving forward.
Outstanding.
Good stuff.
Step in the right direction.
All right. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Scott Davis from Bullpen Trading is going to be our guest. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be back on the road. Davis is going to be the ringmaster for another free-for-all right here on AgriTalk.